Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
It's going to be a doozy today. Hold on tight.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Burke.
What'd you say?
That was awesome.
Tony Burke.
Dr. Burr.
I am Dr. Burr. Where's Hamilton?
Oh, my gosh.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Aaron Burr Show. We are celebrating Aaron Burr, and we will explain to you why later on in the show.
If only we had a show devoted to Health Matters bloopers. Or the ones that never made the cut.
For our audience's information, this, in fact, is the second time we've started this show.
And hey, and it's so the, but it is the first time it's Dr. Weaver.
It's going so much better than it did last time.
It's the best so far. Yeah.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And here, to hopefully get this show off to a more successful start, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And as always, to slow things down and to make our program accessible to the commoner.
Ooh, is that where you're going to go with that?
From the University of Kentucky Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to explain how a commoner can access our program.
You know what? We don't limit it to we are not that kind of a radio show, Tony.
We're talking about Aaron Burr.
But we're not that kind of a radio show. I don't care. We are open to everybody. And you can find it at www.wmky.org, right? Don't you just love saying www?
Rick put that in just to annoy me, to let that be noted.
WMKY.org. There you'll find the non-funny audio of this show. Again, Moorhead State Public Radio website. Look for Health Matters in the menu structure. Find the list of shows. Read the summaries. Listen to the audio, the link that's there with the audio. And then after you've just become so angry and you've just been so upset that you have to say something, jump over to facebook.com/HMRadioShow and share with Health Matters. Become part of the interactive community that exists around Health Matters. Again, you can find us at facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor, returning after a somewhat long hiatus, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late. Vaccinate. Vaccination, the all-natural way to take care of those nasty viruses and bacterial illnesses without resorting to harsh chemical vitamins and antibiotics. Vaccination is like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. And the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, this is a advisory committee to the CDC, has published their vaccination recommendations for adults for 2018, and so we thought it was time to get them on the program. There are a couple of new things on this this guideline that I wanted to make sure that we talked about with our audience, so here we go. First of all, influenza. One dose annually. That's right, one dose every year, influenza vaccine. The reason is that the virus itself modifies itself year in and year out, and so you need to re-up your influenza vaccine. We are trying to make an influenza vaccine that will cover the part of the virus that doesn't change, and it might be a one and done, but until that date, every American adult who does not have some contraindication, the CDC recommends you get vaccinated. The tetanus booster. Rick, you'll be proud. I got my 10-year tetanus booster. I was proud of myself.
Is that the first time in your life you made it to the booster?
That, actually, in fact, it is. Tetanus boosters are recommended every 10 years, and they're recommended on the 10s, 40, 50, and 60. I did turn 60 very recently, so I went and got my 10-year booster. Now, the reason Rick and I are both astonished and somewhat pleased is that means I haven't done anything extremely stupid in the past 5 years because, again, if you step on a nail, clean or dirty, rusty or shiny, if you puncture your skin or if an animal punctures your skin or another human being punctures your skin, then you need a tetanus shot.
Or if you get a burn.
Or if you get a burn, you need a tetanus shot. These are wounds that close over, and tetanus grows in a cavity that closes over. So it's not the nail that carries the tetanus, but the nail produces a cavity in your skin, and it closes over. A burn produces a place on your skin that can close over, and tetanus can grow. So your tetanus shot should be every 10 years. They also recommend something called the Tdap, tetanus diphtheria acellular pertussis. This is whooping cough, and it's recommended once for adults, and we very strongly recommend it if there are infants about to come into your home. If you're a new parent, new grandparent, it's a great time to get your Tdap, your tetanus, plus the acellular pertussis vaccine. The a couple of others, varicella zoster, the chickenpox virus, two doses are recommended for adults, all adults. Many of us had chickenpox. We decided just to go the all natural way and just go ahead and contract the disease. But that vaccination is recommended. The new thing is the Shingrix vaccine. This is an augmented shingles vaccine that is more potent than the old Zostavax. It is now the preferred vaccination for shingles. It is recommended at age 50 or older. Two doses, 2 to 6 months apart, to adults age 50 years or older, regardless of whether or not they have had the shingles, regardless of whether or not they got the old shingles vaccine, Zostavax, still they recommend two doses of Shingrix, which is a more potent, longer-lasting vaccine. They also recommend the HPV vaccine for women under age 26, for men under age 21, and then the pneumonia vaccine, the pneumococcal vaccine, there are some changes with that as well. They are recommending something called the PVC-13, that's Prevnar, I believe is the brand name on that, as the first vaccination, and then 1 year later get the what they used to call the Pneumovax, which is the 23-valent vaccine. It turns out the 23-valent has more different types of pneumococcal parts to vaccinate against, but that Prevnar actually brings about a stronger response. So they are recommending a two-stage pneumonia vaccine 1 year apart. And that's our adult vaccines. That's our sponsor, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late, vaccinate. Aaron Burr, on this date being February 17th, 1801, the U.S. House of Representatives broke an electoral college tie and chose Thomas Jefferson as our third president over Aaron Burr. Aaron Burr was one electoral college vote away from being president of the United States.
Didn't he have some kind of TV talk show, too?
He did just about everything else. His father was president of Princeton. He graduated from Princeton at age 16 with distinction. That was in 1772. He founded J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. At that time, banking was a very, very closed business in New York. No one could start a new bank in New York City. So, in fact, he was selling clean water. But as a lawyer, he wrote the documents that allowed him to retain the money that was left over after people bought their water. So simply no one bought any water, but everyone retained money, and suddenly he had a bank when banks were not supposed to be opening. He became vice president after Jefferson was chosen president. He obviously, as we all know, killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel, July 11th, 1804, indicted for murder in two different states, but charges dismissed. His second wife left him. And now this, you ask about a TV show, which is why I paused, Rick. When Burr's second wife left him, she hired Alexander Hamilton Jr. as her divorce attorney.
Ouch. Little triangle there, huh?
I'm sorry. I think that's funny. His first wife passed away from stomach cancer. Second wife divorced him because he was trying to liquidate her fortune, and she sued him. And then finally, the sex scandal. His second wife accused him of committing adultery. He was known as a womanizer. But in 1861, a book was published anonymously called The Amorous Intrigues and Adventures of Aaron Burr, containing both Burr's life and also a series of explicit sexual dalliances that are probably fictional, but nonetheless, they called it erotica. Maybe the only president to have a sex tape before.
So far.
There were sex tapes.
So far.
You mean that was actually had a director? Because I would have to believe there's got to be some White House footage back in the 90s.
Okay. Fair enough. He was the first. How about that? The first American. Yeah. As far as we know, Washington. Jefferson.
Was he a Democrat first, or a Republican?
Were they Republicans then?
That's a good point. They didn't come along until later, did they?
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, you
really did your research on this.
Honestly, you've exhausted my. I found these fun facts about Aaron Burr, and I put them on the air. This is my knowledge of politics. I know vaguely that history happened.
but at least you got your name right.
You're not going to let that drop, are you? I actually, I misintroduced myself. Let's just get that on the table. Go ahead. You can go back and
you were look. Dr. Burr.
I'm looking at the name of the show, and I'm thinking, I'm moving. My mind moves incredibly fast.
It was moving incredibly slow.
I know. I was way past my name. I was already ready to close out the show, as a matter of fact. And next up from the CDC, and this is the information by the time this show airs. Please hold your applause till I finish messing up the But by the time this show airs, this will be somewhat out of date. But this is the worst influenza season ever, it appears. Overall hospitalizations at their highest since the U.S. CDC began collecting data. We've had shortages of medications. We've had shortages of even of the influenza tests. It has been widespread in 49 states, down to 48. Oregon and Hawaii last week now were reporting decreased activity. The percentage of people going to physicians' offices up to 7.1%. That is 7.1% of all visits. 7.1% of all visits were for influenza. It's been elevated for 10 consecutive weeks. Most flu seasons run 16 to 20. So, unfortunately, we have another month of flu before the groundhog sees his shadow and stops sneezing or coughing or whatever. I don't know. But at any rate, we are still widespread activity. They estimate this year there will be probably around 750,000 hospitalizations due to influenza. And it starts to get tragic. As of February 2nd, 53 children had died. Four out of five were not vaccinated. And half of these children were healthy before they caught the flu. Things to think about if you're worried about your child. If there is persistent high fever, difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, rapid heartbeat, shallow breathing, or they're confused. Those are all signs that you need to get attention for that child who is suffering through the flu. What can you do? What could Rick Phillips do to lower his risk of getting the flu? Number one, get a flu shot. And it is still, in fact, even now, if you've got 10 weeks left, it takes 2 weeks to take full effect. You've got a chance to do something about this with a flu shot. Avoid contact with sick people. And please, if you are a sick person, avoid contact with well people, but also avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. So I get all my medical students to this. When you go in the exam room, you do not touch that area because you can transmit stuff to yourself. Wash your hands frequently. We've heard that over and over again. Use the alcohol-based hand sanitizer. It is effective against influenza virus. Keep your environment clean. I've ran across this fact. One germy doorknob can infect half your office within hours. So hit those common areas and recognize where everyone is putting their hands. Wear a face mask when visiting the hospital. It's in the air if there are a bunch of sick people there. Or don't visit the hospital unless you really have to. This is not a place to go for a social call. If you need to be there. But if you don't, don't. And then finally, take antiviral drugs if your doctor recommends them. We're going to have to end on that happy note. We're going to come back with some more health information when our second fractional portion starts. After the break, you're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello, and welcome back again. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving. It feels like the fourth fractional portion at this point.
And I'm having trouble. Okay. At any rate, my name is Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Aaron Burr Show. We are celebrating that rapscallion, that scoundrel.
Our favorite dueling vice president.
from history, Aaron Burr. We will not go back to the first fractional portion.
Do you think our current president would like to duel? Do you think he would basically want to duel pretty much everybody right now?
Well, I think in the sense of, he does on Twitter, doesn't he? I mean,
yeah.
He doesn't pull his punches. I suspect he saves his ammo and very much that way. Keep in mind, I believe this is correct, elected officials in the state of Kentucky still sign an oath that they will not duel.
Well, I mean,
the point is, you know, I'm the things that we think of right now. Now, first of all, I can make a pretty strong case that U.S. civilization is on the decline, that our country is irrevocably fractured, that we will not even engage in civil discourse. All those things I can make a good case for. On the other hand, historically,
we don't solve things with a duel.
It's been worse. This country has had a civil war. This country has had scoundrels pretty much since we started. Virtually every public office has been used for illicit purposes and throughout our country's history at some point or another. So it is not like we are plowing new ground. It is unfortunate that we have these disagreements, but it is not like this has never happened to us before, I believe. But that's not for
a
health show.
But you know, Tony, one thing, Health Matters has been pure all that time. Right? There has been no corruption. There has been no...
Aside from lack of talent and some minor editing mistakes, I can't see any problem with Health Matters. Our sponsor...
I'm not sure you can edit what we do.
For the second time, the Vaccination League, like Mother Nature, with a 23-gauge needle vaccination, the all-natural way to take care of those nasty viruses and bacteria. Now, I'm going to run through this quickly. I want to sear this into your brain. These are the recommended vaccines for adults. Number one, influenza every year. Number two, tetanus every 10 years. And one of those tetanus shots will include pertussis, the whooping cough, and it is best to get that if you have infant children about to come into your home. Number three, varicella, the chickenpox, if you've not had chickenpox, the chickenpox virus. Number four, they are recommending Shingrix. This is the new, more potent, longer-lasting, augmented shingles vaccine. Two doses of Shingrix, 2 to 6 months apart, now the official recommendation of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Next, HPV, if you are a woman, ages, I believe it's 12 to 26, if you're less than 26. If you're a man, if you're less than 21, recommend you get the HPV vaccine. It protects you against human papillomavirus that causes cervical cancer. I believe 90% the last time I read about it. Also, penile cancers. It is a particularly nasty virus. And it has been implicated now in some head and neck cancers due to people having oral sex. And so there are a lot of reasons that your boy or your girl, your children should consider the HPV vaccine. Finally, there is a series 1 year apart of Prevnar, the 13-valent pneumonia vaccine, and Pneumovax, the 23-valent pneumonia vaccine. Both of those are recommended now 1 year apart. That's our sponsor, Vaccination League. Don't be late. Vaccinate. Well, we sort of wandered through the influenza epidemic last week, and fractional portion. I want to talk now some about Philip Morris Tobacco Company and their new product called Heat Sticks. For $80, you or any other lucky customer could have, and I emphasize could have, received an iPhone-sized charger and a pen-like device which holds heat sticks, 300 milligrams tobacco plug, about half the tobacco in a cigarette. They would be marketed under the Marlboro name, so I guess you would get a Marlboro heat stick. So you could be like an electronic cowboy lighting up your heat stick. The heating blade rises to 662 degrees Fahrenheit, vaporizing the tobacco, but that's half the temperature of actual burning tobacco.
That's a whole different take on vaping.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that was intriguing. Yep, it is.
Well, I thought you were going to elaborate. I'm getting out of the way for you to say something intelligent.
No.
And I'm waiting.
No, not going to happen. Sorry about that.
Okay, so 662 degrees. That normal cigarette burns at 1,200 degrees. Cigarette smoke has 4,000 plus chemicals. The heat stick has 750. So you get down to...
That's better.
Yeah, 750 chemicals. 50 are present actually at higher levels than in a cigarette. And the FDA says, well, that's what you could do, but we're not going to allow it. The FDA's advisory committee says don't allow it. The FDA has to make a final decision, but the advisory committee said don't allow it. Now, it's hard to feel sorry for Philip Morris. Philip Morris says that it's trying to move all their sales to smoke-free products. It is trying, Philip Morris is, to make a safer cigarette, and they feel they've made one. The heat stick, its official name is IQOS, which means absolutely nothing. It was just a bunch of letters they got. I'm serious. It doesn't stand for anything. It's already approved in 30 countries. 3.7 million people have switched from smoking to that device, according to Philip Morris's data, but the FDA was not buying it. Now, why would the FDA not buy a heat stick? I mean, their critics say, look, it's got less than a quarter of the total chemicals that are present in cigarettes. It has not been linked to cancer yet. And I mean, that's you'd have to say yet because, again, the product's not even on the market, so we can't say exactly how dangerous it would be. But how could it be any more dangerous than cigarettes? We're trying to do the right thing here, and you're giving us grief. The other argument, then, the reason is because it contains fully the same amount of nicotine as cigarettes, and nicotine's addictive. So the way I put it to Shelley before we started the program, Rick, is I said, what if I marketed a device that could get your kids addicted to heroin without using the needles or going to drug dealers or anything else, a safe way to become addicted to heroin? How would you feel about that as a parent?
You probably wouldn't have made it on the air today.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is the problem with heat sticks and with any of these products is they produce a rapid rise in nicotine levels, which produces addiction. Now, from that addiction, and we've seen this with vaping, is that people will transfer back and forth from the e-cigarette to combustible cigarettes and to other products. And so, once again, are you satisfied that this thing, aside from the addictive part, the nicotine part, everything else looks to be safer? Is that good enough? And the FDA committee said, no, it produces an addiction, and you can't sell something that produces an addiction. And again, they'll put a minimum age on it, but it doesn't matter. You'll get young people addicted to it. And you've made it look like an iPhone with its own charger and so forth.
I mean, the whole thing is just sad, right? I mean, is it really, when we get into a room, can't we figure out a different way to become billionaires or stay billionaires? I mean, why do we have to target that?
Well,
get the addiction out of it. People want to smoke, you know, but, you know, the fact is they are intentionally creating an addiction.
Right.
So that they can sell their product forever.
That's their business model. And keep in mind, they have warehouses full of tobacco. They have machines that manipulate and blend tobacco. And their model is based on getting people addicted to tobacco.
Why can't they do it the same way Mountain Dew does, right?
Well, honestly, what can you expect out of Philip Morris? I mean, in their defense, they are trying to make their business model safer. I guess the question is, do we allow
Shouldn't
them?
Shouldn't they just switch to solar energy? Isn't it time that the cigarette companies just figure out a whole – I mean, shouldn't they be making tobacco-looking clothes?
Well, one of the
turn it into fabric or something.
The strategy for the FDA, not entirely clear, but it may very well be that they're saying, look, market it any way you want to, but we're going to regulate nicotine, the addictive part. And if you want to sell tar, if you want to sell chemicals, if you want to sell smoke and ashes, you go right ahead. We will keep it from being addictive. And that is where they differ.
It probably needs to go
product.
That way.
Yeah. And then at that point, sure, you can set fire to it. You can do whatever you want to. It's just going to be a nasty fire flame full of burning leaves that has no power over you.
So the question would be then is if we were successful in getting that kind of a restriction or we would deem that that is harmful to the public health, you know, so for in the interest of public safety, we don't allow but a minimal amount of nicotine. Could they do that with sugar?
Yes, absolutely. You could tax it to say, look, you're going to pay.
Well, no, but they're not talking about taxing these cigarettes. They're talking about putting them on some kind of FDA-controlled list
right.
where you can only get a minuscule amount over the counter.
Yeah.
So that's not a tax.
Okay.
What if you actually said, hey, vendor A selling product A, you can only have this much sugar or sugar substitute in your
– But what if I said, you know, if you give me a little bit of leeway here, I'll put it on broccoli. So in the net effect is it's good for you. Yeah, you get addicted to the sugar, but you're eating broccoli.
But you're still they regulate the amount of sugar.
Yeah, you got to use a lot of sugar to eat broccoli.
No, Tony. You clearly don't understand broccoli the way that, you know. But it doesn't require – you don't have to put any sugar on broccoli, but you do need a lot of cheese.
Yeah. It's going to need to be something. But there's the example. I mean, you know, so Philip Morris is doing something good. They have a less toxic product, but they're going to have to use nicotine for their business model. All right, I would say, look, you know, would you allow us to regulate sugar that way? And I haven't thought this through. You brought it up. I'm just responding. If there is some good that comes from it, could we then go to higher levels of sugar? Or do you say, no, I'm just going to this is it. Nobody's going to be addicted to sugar.
That's it. We're doing away with pudding. It's out.
Yeah. Now, meanwhile, of course, I've got to – let me just show you – let me take you in the back room and let me show you what I got here in the way of high sugar products. Now, you know, between you and me, these are not going to be on the market, but my goodness, I got some good stuff in the back room. There will be – certainly there will be a black market. Let's face it. If you outlaw Mountain Dew, there's going
to
be a black
market. Can you imagine? I have to go in the back room to get a piece of cake. Got to go buy your
a donut.
Hey, I'm dealing donuts out of the back of the car.
Yeah, and how we know if the police are dirty or not if it's donuts, you know?
You got any?
Yeah.
Hey, man, you got any?
Yeah. Hey, we'll get through this prohibition. That's the problem, though, if you outlaw something.
That's the loose point I was trying to make is at some point we can restrict the nicotine and call it, you know, in the event of, you know, we're doing something for public safety. But there's a lot of people that would suggest there are other things we could do and we have tried to do in the name of public safety that have been unsuccessful. Things like making people wear a helmet.
Yeah. That type of thing. I just feel like nicotine, I don't know that it has, you know, even if you've never had sugar before, you know, sugar tastes pretty good. Once a month, it still tastes pretty sweet. You wonder, why is nicotine, you know, other than creating addiction, why you put nicotine in the products in the first place? Now, you said, you know, I'm not sure I can follow that model through. I understand what you're saying, but I can't quite follow it all the way through. Sugar has been problematic. I do believe, you know, it has biochemically, it hits your brain very rapidly and makes you feel very good. And that's sort of in a very general and vague
sense.
You're
talking about sugar.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, nicotine, heroin, cocaine, all of them.
Well, but I mean, so the thing is I believe that there is a, like heroin, you know, I think when you start looking at, you know, narcotics, you know, you're talking about things that are absolutely in certain doses completely lethal, right? I mean,
yes.
They are deadly. You know, nicotine, when it was in a cigarette, got you addicted to something that a large group of population would die because of it.
Right.
You know, addicting somebody is not the same as giving them, you know, again, harmful things that is absolutely going to kill them. They're just going to be addicted to it the rest of their life.
Right. So Philip Morris Council, Rick Phillips, says, okay, so they're addicted. If they're addicted to something that's not as harmful, where's the problem?
Well, I you know, I totally don't like this. Don't get me wrong. I'm totally on the – I'm against this. But I'm saying there is some element of public safety versus public nuisance.
Yeah. Well, we can postulate that cell phones, smartphones –
you
are
could say
both
that
addictive and also harmful.
In many, many, many ways.
Yes. So is it – do we then as a society, we say we do not want people to be addicted, or do we say if you can be addicted without harm, we will allow you to be addicted?
Well, I think we've chosen the latter whether we say we have or not.
Yes.
Right? So how does nicotine in any way, shape, or form – now, it's different when you're pushing tar and you're pushing – you know, things that we know, you know, cause cancer. If they're pushing things that we don't really know or maybe don't, then it's a whole different game, I think.
Well, I think you can disagree with the FDA's approach. I think you could do that. You could say, look, this cigarette in you're not approving a lifestyle here. You're approving a product, and this product is much less harmful than products on the market. Done. That's what I'm sure the other 30 countries did.
Right.
Either that or Philip Morris bulldozed their processes with their money. But for whatever reason, they approved it, and I understand that. Let's focus on this product. The FDA says, no, you've got to look at the big picture. Once you're addicted to nicotine, bad things start happening. And what they're trying to do is to slip this thing in, and then once they've got you addicted, then and at this point, they don't even need to market the other bad things. I mean, once you're addicted, at the very
least,
you'll
go looking for them.
You're going to go looking for those things, and you're probably going to come back and get some more Marlboro heat sticks.
Especially if they end up the chemicals that it takes to put in these devices to make them end up becoming cost prohibitive.
It is dividing the medical community, though. There are some that advocate something called harm reduction, And this is in every addictive substance. Why don't we get people on methadone? Because it's less harmful overall than heroin or fentanyl. Why don't we, again, if you go to extremes, you'd say, why don't we give our kids birth control options? Because that is less harmful than allowing them to become pregnant. So to some degree or another, harm reduction is one of our major strategies. And they're simply, this is harm reduction. Very pure and raw. This is less harmful product, and yet our some people say the tobacco purists just won't allow Philip Morris to market anything. But I think there is some science, there is some rationale behind not looking at this as an individual product. Now you have to decide. Our listeners have to decide, and they're very intelligent people, by and large. They have to decide whether or not this looks to be a suitable strategy. But the FDA has not made a final ruling, but their advisory committee has said don't approve it. And that's where it stands as of the end of January. Next up, I'm going to try to, if Rick will just continue to read his emails, I think I can get through this one.
I'm watching the Tesla in space. Now you be good.
Rick has a picture of the Elon Musk Tesla in space, a live view, and he's watching the thing slowly.
It's more fun to watch than listening to this.
Okay, so if you want, just to get the Phillips experience, keep your radio on, turn it up and down.
It's not really
just
making
turn
any
it so
noise.
That my words are garbled, and then you get your computer and get that camera of the Elon Musk Tesla.
Think that you're sitting in your driver's seat. And you're looking out, staring into space. I mean, I've seen a lot of drivers that look that way.
Yeah. So it'd be great. AMA Internal Medicine, 1 minute and 30 seconds. Thank you, Rick. Lisa Schwartz, Stephen Woolishin, Institute for Health Policy at Dartmouth. We spend over $2 billion a year on Restasis, which they call a marginally effective drug for a condition many people would not consider to be a disease. Restasis treats dry eyes. Now, dry eyes can be a pretty serious problem. It can cause a lot of discomfort. We spend $2 billion a year in the U.S. treating it. In fact, we treat it with a drug that really doesn't work very well. The original research on Restasis did not meet their endpoints for effectiveness. So the company, Allergan, changed their endpoints and got a new endpoint. And it sort of met that. Then they divided their patients into high-tier and low-tier groups, and they got positive data on that. That was enough to get it approved in Canada. It is not approved in Europe, not approved in Australia, because they feel that Allergan people cooked the data on Restasis. Whether or not it works, if it does work, it makes your eyes more lubricated and not as dry. Should we be spending $2 billion a year to make our eyes feel more lubricated? Now, I want you to hold that thought. Think about that. Cry over it during the break, because we're going to come back and talk more about Restasis in our final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. I know we started this on the first try. We're feeling very good about that. This is the Aaron Burr Show. Our salute to that scoundrel, the man who was almost president, the man who tied Thomas Jefferson in the Electoral College for presidency, but Jefferson was chosen by the U.S. House of Representatives, and Aaron Burr went on to infamy on a number of levels. Our sponsor for the final time, the Vaccination League. Vaccinate, don't be late.
Is that the way it's really supposed to start?
It's don't be late, vaccinate. But it could be either one. The main thing is that you vaccinate. Vaccinate is the thing. Don't be late is not the thing.
Well, actually, don't be late is really the point you're trying to drive home.
That's correct. And the point is vaccination. People talk – because it has a syringe and a needle, people think, well, this is the height of chemical intrusion. In fact, inside that needle is a dead virus.
You make it sound so marvelous.
I know. And that dead virus shows your body what the virus would look like. Your body makes its own chemicals. It makes its own naturally occurring chemicals to handle that virus. The virus, of course, gets cleared. The chemicals are there so that if your body ever sees that influenza or that shingles or that thing, your body can respond rapidly. That's why it is like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle.
So what you're saying is vaccination is really like the same process by which the Olympians are preparing for their events, right?
I have no idea what that means, but I like it.
Right? You're actually giving your body the chance to prepare.
You are giving it a fighting chance. You are instructing your body about what it's going to face.
Practice makes perfect.
Absolutely. And the vaccinations, we're talking about influenza once a year, tetanus every 10 years, unless you step on something and have to go to the emergency room. Or you're a guy. And one of those tetanuses should be the Tdap that has acellular pertussis, which fights whooping cough, especially if you have a baby coming into the house. Chickenpox vaccine, two doses of that for adults if you have not had chickenpox. The Shingrix shingles vaccine. This is the new augmented, more potent, longer-lasting shingles vaccine. The old Zostavax, not preferred. Preferred is two doses of the Shingrix vaccine. Those two doses, 2 to 6 months apart. Also, remember from last year where we were talking about the pneumonia vaccine, it is not a single vaccine anymore. It is the Prevnar 13-valent vaccine, followed 1 year later by the Pneumovax 23-valent vaccine. If you've only had the Pneumovax, and if you only had one shot, it was probably that, then you should get the Prevnar if it's been more than a year. So 1 year apart between those two, but there are two vaccines you will need to have the best protection against the pneumococcus. And finally, the HPV vaccine for women under 26, men under 21. Those are your adult vaccinations. Now, when we left last time, we were talking about Restasis, the dry eye treatment, and the fact that they cooked the scientific information. And although the U.S. FDA did buy it, and we bought it to the tune of $2 billion a year, Canada approved it after they altered their test groups. But the European Medicines Agency and the Australian approval body did not approve this drug. This article, actually, from AMA Internal Medicine I first caught it in the British Medical Journal because in the United Kingdom, their National Institute for Health and Care Excellence approved a Japanese product called Icurvis, which is cyclosporin, same as Restasis, and it is one quarter the cost. Restasis, $400 a month. Icurvis, $100 a month. And that's what's available in the United Kingdom. And there may be around 60,000 people in England and Wales have a severe form of dry eye disease. And that is very minimal compared to 3 million prescriptions every year in the U.S. for Restasis. And I will remind you also, Restasis is the drug that Allergan has tried to transfer the patent to the St. Regis Mohawk Indian Tribe in order to avoid patent challenges in U.S. courts. They have sovereign immunity, so in exchange for a percentage, the Mohawk Indians will take that patent on. That is being challenged in court as well. So altogether, an unsavory product and one of marginal effectiveness and for a condition, dry eyes, that can be really a major problem, but for most people is not, and yet we are spending $2 billion a year. Here with a rebuttal is Shelley. Take it away.
Might not be a strong rebuttal, but I use Restasis at this time. I don't know how long I'll continue to use it, but I do have severe dry eye. I've had hysterectomy. I'm on some blood pressure medications. And the most annoying thing is that my vision gets really blurry when my eyes get real dry. So I use the Restasis. It does seem to make them feel better, makes my vision less blurry. But when I go to my eye doctor, the test doesn't really show that it's helping.
Okay. This doesn't mean the drug is not effective. They said minimal effectiveness at best. It did not meet their target endpoints, which is not the same as being completely ineffective or harmful. Now, in doing this, Shelley, your insurance covers it.
Yes.
Which means the other people, I've got to be careful because Shelley is a moral person and very lovable. You would if you met Shelley, you would enjoy her company. She is a wonderful person to be around. But the nature of insurance in the United States is Shelley does not have to pay for this medicine.
Correct. And to be totally honest and totally fair, there are things that you can do to make it last longer. than how it's originally prescribed safely. And my mother was given a prescription of Restasis. She did not tolerate it. It burned her eyes when she used it. And she uses a mail order pharmacy. So I have like 3 months from her, which is going to end up being like 6 months worth of medication. Instead of throwing away what she had, which would have happened if she had sent it back to the pharmacy, I'm using it. So doing it as morally as possible.
You, in fact, are providing a service.
I'm disposing of excess Restasis.
Fair enough. And it does seem it has – you feel there is some symptomatic improvement even if it's not measurable in the eye doctor's office.
Yeah, and in between using – you know, I use the Restasis twice a day. In between, I use over-the-counter preservative-free eye drops. And honestly, that going forward is probably just what I'll continue to use because I don't think that it's worth the cost of the Restasis if I'm not seeing the improvement at the eye doctor.
And that's – There is then this problem that we're spending that much money. I've got to hear some spending data. This was Wall Street Journal back in January. Healthcare spending for Americans with their employer-sponsored coverage rose in 2016, even though their healthcare utilization dropped. They were utilizing less services but paying more money. Spending on healthcare has increased because prices are rising, not because of a greater use. Healthcare spending grew by 4.6% per person from 2015 to 2016, even as the utilization actually dropped. Miami Herald, back on January 23rd, said every year from 2012 to 2016, Americans paid more for their healthcare, mostly due to double-digit price hikes for brand-name prescription drugs, such as Restasis, also inpatient surgeries and ER visits. This study was based on 4 billion insurance claims from about 39 million people. So it's a pretty reliable number. We are paying more and more for health care. We also, due to the nature of our the remnants of the Affordable Care Act, which is more or less still in place, employers are increasing their deductibles, increasing the amount the employees kick in. So this is actually coming out of pocket, many of these costs. So in the face of those type of price increases, it's really hard for us to justify millions of prescriptions of Restasis, $2 billion spent on a dry eye drug. We've got to, I think, focus on the things we need to do. Now, if you are a person who suffers from a critical dry eye disease, and there are some inflammatory diseases that cause critical dryness of the eyes, I'm not talking about you, but there are not millions of people out there suffering from those diseases. I let this slide by, and I can't let this slide by anymore. I think this is important. Viagra, December 11th, went generic. Brand name Viagra costs almost $70 a pill. The generic is white, not blue, and it's $32 a pill.
So are you saying, Tony, you can get twice as much?
You Well, I haven't done the math.
I'm just glad to know what color it is because when patients call and request that little blue pill, now it'll be that little white pill, and I'll know what they're talking about.
You know, and there are only so many colors. Everybody knows the purple pill.
Yeah.
And everybody knows the pink liquid.
I want the cheap blue white knockoff.
Pretty much. This was courtesy of, I believe this was on Reuters back in December. Five interesting facts about the little blue pill. First of all, fun fact number one, Viagra was originally intended to treat chest pain. And this is one of the reasons why it has been such a good medicine. It does alter blood flow. Obviously, that's how it works. But the idea was they were going to use it to treat either heart failure or angina-type chest pains by dilating the blood vessels in the heart. It didn't work terribly well for that, but it wasn't harmful. So we knew from the start, based on the research, that it was safe or reasonably safe for people with heart disease. So that was one of the benefits. It was actually originally designed to treat heart trouble.
And there are women who take it for that very purpose.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. It does work by blocking an enzyme that is found in tissue in the male diaper area called phosphodiesterase number 5. That enzyme regulates blood flow. And so, in fact, if you block it, you can prop open the blood flow in, and propping open the blood flow in allows more blood flow and allows a person to achieve an erection. Fun fact number two, it does not boost sex drive. In that sense, there is no known even physiologic mechanism for it to be of benefit to women. And yet, you know, psychologically, I suppose, for whatever reason, it does. Some women take it and claim benefits. Shelly's looking at me, and I've never heard that.
I've never heard it. Now, I've used that argument for the occasional college male that has requested it.
Yeah. It makes you feel like you can do more
You can't.
No. It does not boost your sex drive. The other thing, just a reminder, it shouldn't be taken with other medicines that dilate the blood vessels because you can do too much there. You can dilate the blood vessels to the point where your blood pressure actually drops. And so when we look at nitroglycerin and other, we call them nitrates, that people with heart disease take, that can, you add those two together and you wind up on the floor and not in a good way. And then finally, it's used to treat other things. We've used it to treat high blood pressure in the lungs. That's called pulmonary arterial high blood pressure. It also has helped, even with premature babies, they do that. It is sold under the name of Revatio, I believe, Revatio or Revatio for that. And that is actually lower cost. And there is one problem. People have asked for the lower cost version to treat pulmonary hypertension. In order to get around the high price of the erectile dysfunction drug. But for whatever reason, Viagra no longer a brand name drug, and in fact, now generics are available. I do not, frankly, at $32 a pill, I don't expect a rush of people headed to my office.
Why, when something goes generic like that, typically you see the prices drop way down. How did this one... Still, I mean, 32 a pill still seems like an awful lot for a small pill.
Well, but your point, I will agree with your initial point. The price, in fact, is about half what it was. Now, if I'm making this pill, I'm thinking, okay, it's not about, you know, how much does it cost to keep the lights on at the factory? How much do I have to pay the workers? The question is, how much money can I make off this drug? And so I'm thinking, all right, if I make it half price, then that's probably going to be good enough that I can gain control of the market and still turn a really nice profit. But I don't think that bears any relationship at all to production expenses.
Hmm.
It's just a business calculation.
So is there any, you know, there's what, about three different brands of male
yes.
drugs?
Yes, Levitra, Cialis, and...
I don't know if there's even any more than that. But, I mean, do they each have, I mean, this one... went generic, but I mean, I think the others get a lot of the play on TV, right?
Right. A couple of reasons. Yeah. First of all, this is short acting, so you do have to plan ahead and take it, whereas the others are once a day. You just take them, and then whenever, you know, the big thing, whenever the mood hits.
Whenever there's a couple of bathtubs around.
Yeah. And
outside.
Whenever, yeah.
On a mountain. Yeah.
Whatever. So in that sense, they're more convenient. The other thing, and one of them, and I think, Shelley, it was Cialis, got approved to treat a male prostate, prostatic hypertrophy, an enlarged prostate. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, you can get it paid for as a disease management condition on a daily basis, which obviously if you're
at $72 a pill.
That's very handy to have it to you be able to take it daily because of some medical condition.
And out of patients who I have had who have taken the Viagra, they tend to complain a lot more about side effects because it is short acting and I don't know, maybe it's just not as clean as the other two.
So what is a typical path to generic status? Is it a 10-year window?
Yes. It's
so
10.
It's 10 from the date it's released?
Well, you know, it gets complicated. I still remember diltiazem.
They make modifications to it, right? And then
right.
They restart the clock.
What they do is they can make the modifications. They can drop the modified down so that they capture the market again with their modified product, which is on the market typically months before the generic comes out. And those modifications, they may change it to an extended release form, or they may make it so that it dissolves in your mouth or things like that. And then they market that, and they capture the market with their new product, and they basically stifle them. The other thing that's happened is they made direct financial payments to their competitors. They say, look, I will pay you this much money not to make the product. And it's worthwhile. Everybody wins. The other company doesn't have to do anything except collect money. Meanwhile, they enjoy their patent rights.
Tony, I mean, we could open up a pill company, couldn't we?
Oh.
If they would pay us not to make anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Shkreli did. I mean, what we need to do is figure out if we can find, if we can buy all the factories making a certain pill, we can set whatever price we want. The feds can't negotiate with us, so that means that it's we control the market. It's just, it's a great business
model. I'd rather just tell them we're going to do this and they pay us not to.
I like the idea of being paid. This is, to me...
I mean, that'd be great if we didn't have to deal with those whole pesky upfront expenses.
Right,
and stuff.
Right. I think if I were paid not to make a drug, I believe I could do that for a long time. I can see
and,
that...
And, I'd probably do it a lot less than the competitors.
Oh, I would make so little of that drug that there's no way anybody could make any less than I do. I'm good at this. It's a talent. It really is.
What's that old song from Dire Straits, Money for Nothing?
Right. Mm-hmm. And we should be off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org. Or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember...
that Rick was against doing this. Health Matters works for men with radio dysfunction by increasing blood flow to the ears so you can get and keep an ear action hard enough for radio listening.
Individual results may vary. It's been proven to help guys with all degrees of radio dysfunction. Health Matters usually starts to work within 30 to 60 minutes, and you only take it when you need it.
Health Matters works only when you are listening to radios. You may take it up to 4 hours before radioactivity, so don't worry, there's no need to rush.
After our show, your ear action should go away. In the rare event of an ear action lasting through Bluegrass Railroad, seek immediate medical help to avoid long-term injury.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down.
You didn't have to say anything.
Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.